Hi guys, this is Steve, aka Press Play on Tape, and you are listening to The Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. Joining me today, for potentially the last time, is Mads. Hello, Mads.
Hi, Steve.
Dean.
Hello.
Hello, and Chris.
Holding back the tears, mate.
Holding back the tears. And Matt has sadly left already. So, yeah, this episode, you may have noticed the description on the cover of the episode is the end. Now, this show has been running for a long, long time, back since the 20s, when Dean was 45.
I'm not 45 yet, you cheeky sod, but no, we started in 2011, October.
October 2011, so what's that, make us 8 years old?
Yeah. So the first episodes are pretty much retro by now.
It's retro. Mm. Yeah. So we've been going for a long time, and it's been a lot of effort and a lot of work by a lot of people to get us to this point. And you know, we've been talking about it for a while, and we've basically come to the conclusion that we should complete some games. So the name of this episode is The End, because we're going to reach the end of some games. So yes, that's the plan. So, sorry guys, sorry if we duped you and you thought we were going to end the show. Sadly not. We are going to actually play some games to the end for a laugh. So, guys, what are we thinking? This is a good plan or what?
Great plan, yes.
Yeah. So, before we get onto that then, let's do a little bit of a catch-up and a little bit of the news, so I'll just combine them into one. So, Dino, what have you been up to?
I've been preparing to leave because I thought this was the last episode.
I fooled you as well. Brilliant.
Damn, I thought I was going to have a rest. What have I been up to? Not an awful lot, really. I did buy it's not a Tomytronics, what were those car games called? You know the ones
know
by Tomy.
Yeah,
the Turbo Racing thing. I bought something similar to that, but it's not by Tomy, it's by a different company.
Is there a little steering wheel and the screen on the side?
That's right, yeah. Well, it was broke, which I knew anyway when I ordered it, but I'm going to try and convert it to an Outrun sort of machine, because this one is actually modelled after a Ferrari, so...
Nice.
I'll try and give that a try.
I mean, that's going to be some project, that, Dino.
Yeah, it's going to take me a long time. And yeah, it's lack of funds as well at the moment, you know, buying the stuff that I need. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't think I've been playing much. Pole Position, the tiny arcade I had done a review of. That's quite good.
Yeah, watch that today. Yeah. People should check it out. It was a good little review. And I say little because it is tiny.
It is tiny, and it's a very quick review. But yeah, no, other than that, and Metal Slug 3 I had a very quick go of, and I died.
So are you going to be a contender?
I don't think so. I don't know. I've got tomorrow to try and get into it again. But yeah, very tough game.
Yeah, indeed. But a great game.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
you've got to give it an hour or so, Dean. I think because it does. There are ways to get through the first level pretty quickly, and you'll at least get up to kind of 600,000 points. If you give yourself an hour.
The trouble is, you know, the majority of the guys have been playing it all week, and I'm now at the stage. If I switch my arcade machine on, my boy, who's nearly 7 now, he's just on it, and I don't get a look in. So I only tend to switch it on if he's out the house and he's away overnight. So in the morning, I will be switching it on and having a go. But yeah, I'll see how I get on.
Good man. Good man.
It's tough. I've had a go. I've had a couple of goes on it, and it's tough. There's loads of places to get points, though. I had a quick look on YouTube to just get some hints and tips. I didn't realise there's literally places...
You cheat?
I'm not cheating. I'm that's called research, gentlemen.
I'm studying.
That's research. Because it's still hard to pull off, regardless of what you see on YouTube, and you try and do it, do it yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
I noticed there was like immediately as you start the game, if you throw a mine, a load of fish appear in the water, give you thousands of points, and then if you shoot particular bits of scenery and stuff, you get more and more stuff. So there's loads to it that you don't even realise is there.
Yeah.
Steve, stop giving Mads all the tips.
I didn't know that. That's good.
Yeah.
Just forget you ever heard that, Mads. You don't get loads of points at all.
I think I'm about 50,000 points behind Chris at the moment, and I really need to remedy that tonight.
No.
So that landmine at the beginning, Mads, that's worth about 60,000 points.
Ooh, and now I'm in front of you already,
it's
Steve.
It's not. Chris, it's worth 4,100 points it's worth.
Oh, Chris already knows.
So you might need to do about 10 of those, Mads. Mm. Yeah, I YouTubed it as well.
There you go. Okay. Mm. There you go. So, Mads, what have you been up to, mate?
Well, actually playing a lot of Metal Slug 3 these past couple of days. It's great fun. Even though it really bugs me that I'm behind Chris at the moment, but I'll make sure to be in front of him before we record.
Yeah, well, you usually win, don't you?
Yeah, that's it.
He's Steve.
Good man, Steve. Good man. Apart from that, I've been buying myself a new Spectrum, a ZX Spectrum Plus 2, and I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on that. And I bought the Div MMC, you know, the flash card for loading the games, and one of those nice cables from Ian so I get the RGB SCART out of it. So I'm really looking forward to getting proper into some ZX Spectrum gaming.
Yeah, and this is the grey Plus 2 that you've gone for, Matt.
Yes. And this is for the December Game Club.
Exactly.
Yeah. What was the final list of games for the people to vote on?
Oh, God.
Wow, you put us on the spot.
I put you on the spot there. Come on. You should know this. Right,
one of the games I can't pronounce, so I'll let someone else say that.
Tiernanog. Tiernanog. Two scousers, a cockney and a Dane trying to pronounce it.
Tiernanog.
And Batman the movie.
Manic Miner.
Batman the movie, and was it Manic Miner? Was one of them?
A Manic Miner.
There you go. I wasn't even on this episode, and I know. My word.
You listen to one for a change.
I listen to it instead. Yeah, I don't normally listen if I'm not on it, but... cool. Chris, so what have you been up to, mate?
A few things on the gaming front. So loads of Metal Slug 3 because I have to beat Mads this month. There is no doubt.
Yeah, but you won't.
But I will, because I will fly to Denmark and I'll sabotage your computer so you can't play it. Because I can't start the second year of the Game Club AC being 2-0 down. Because that feels like a long way back, that. Mm. So I have to win this month. So, and do you know what? I love Metal Slug as well. I haven't played much of it before the start of this month. But since I first picked it up last weekend, I've barely been able, if I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about, right, next time I do it, next time I get to that second level boss, this is what I'm going to do. I turn into a zombie before. And, you know, it's just kind of all these things going through my head. But a couple of other things away from Metal Slug 3. So picked up... or didn't pick it up, it landed on my doorstep, was the unofficial Atari Visual History book by Darren Doyle.
Yeah.
It's Darren Doyle, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great little tome, that is. Steve, it's one that you should have a look at, because obviously you were an Atari computer owner, weren't you?
I was indeed, yeah. So I'll check it out. I haven't even heard of it, to be honest.
So it's a bit like, I mean, inspired by what Sam does, clearly, because it's very, very similar. And it has all interviews with former developers of Atari computer games, but it is basically a visual history of the Atari computer series.
Nice.
And but the weird thing is he sent me two, which is a bit odd. So I got my first one on Monday, and it was all nice. And then yesterday, another big heavy parcel landed on the doorstep, and my wife's like, what's that? What have you been buying now? It's going back. And I opened it, and it was another one. So I need to try and get in touch with Darren and send him it back.
Oh, you can just edit this bit out, and you can send it to me.
No, that's naughty.
Well, you just said that. You just told me I should read it, and then told me you've got two copies, and then basically told me you're not giving me the other one.
Well, if you choose to edit it out, then I might have to.
No, that would be a bit mean. I tell you what, if Dan's listening, it sounds like a great book. Dan, can I have it? And if not, Chris will send it back to you. So let Dan know.
And you probably ought to get his name. You ought to get his name right, Steve, because it's Darren. So you're definitely not having one now.
I've just basically made sure I'm not getting that, haven't I? Great. Darren, I am so sorry, mate. It's because Chris speaks with this weird plastic Scouse accent and I can't understand him.
Weird lilty Scouse accent.
It sounded like Dan in my headphones. I apologise. Darren, it sounds like an excellent book. I'd love to read it.
So that's good. And I also bought my own Christmas present from my wife last night. I bought myself a Famicom Everdrive to go with the Famicom that I've also bought myself from my wife.
Sounds good, mate.
All good.
She's a lovely lady, your wife. She's a great girl, your wife.
It's basic. Go online, buy yourself what you want, and I'll swing you the money. So it's all
nice.
Good.
So you bought the original Famicom?
I've got the Famicom AV.
Okay.
So which is the one I particularly wanted. Yep.
So I've got the original one, but I've got an AV mod for it, so I can get composite out.
Yes.
Yeah. So this one obviously out the box was composite out.
Nice.
And the Famicom, yeah, which I'll come on to in a little bit when I talk about my game, but I'm particularly interested at the moment in NES era games. And I think a lot of the best versions of those games were on
the
Famicom.
Why is that, Chris? So because the reason I'm asking is because obviously with YouTube, you know, the NES is very popular and we've covered it, obviously. And yeah, we do play the games, but it was never big in the UK, not until, well, it was quite late, wasn't it? It was when that Turtles pack came out. So.
Well, when was that? 89?
Oh, no, I reckon that was 90 at least.
Yeah, that was really late, considering it came out in 83, 84 in Japan.
And in the States, I think it was 86, wasn't it? It
something like that. So why am I interested in it?
Yeah,
at the moment?
What's got you into it?
Probably exactly what you've just said, because it wasn't big over here. I never had one. I had bought a NES about 18 months ago when I really got back into collecting systems. But I never had a NES when I was younger, and I didn't really. I mean, you guys know what it was like. In the playground, it was all the micros. Yeah. And you normally had one kiddie who had a NES who used to go on about Mario, and everyone just used to tell him to shut up. Because we were either jealous or weren't interested, or it was never as good as Monty Mole. So it was one of those things that it was kind of looked up at as, oh, I'd love one of them, but you also pretended to look down at it. Because it was kind of one of those things that you'd never have.
So I'd always just tell that one kid that Mario was just a Genesis clone.
Yeah, exactly.
How was it over in your part of the world, Mads? Was it popular there or?
Nope, not at all. Not at all, mate. Nobody I knew except. Yeah, actually, I think one of my cousins had one at some point late in 1990, 91, I guess. Yeah, but other than that, everybody had the computers.
Yeah, I only knew it was my cousin, actually, who bought the Turtles bundle. But previous to that, you know, you used to see them on sale in Boots over here. Boots the Chemist, which was a bit strange. Yeah. And Woolworths used to stock it, and probably Toys R Us. But generally, you know, most shops, it really was the home micros and obviously the Master System did become popular.
And now, Dean, I'm really interested in how all of these famous and popular series that are still running now, where they started. Yeah. And since I've become involved with you guys and I've woken up, I can only do these things now really on real hardware. And I know that's a horribly snooty and snobbish thing to say.
I was saying last episode.
It's authentic.
Was, you know, I played a lot of the games on emulators, but once we started doing the show, I felt like I needed to experience the games on the real hardware to give my opinion and point of view across. You know, generally, you need to play them on the real hardware.
It's addictive, and there's something. It just feels like it's more tangible, it's more valuable if you've got it in your hands, the proper controllers. And take nothing away from emulation at all. I use it all the time for various things. But there is just something about experiencing these things, knowing that back in 1986, 1987, whenever it was, this is how somebody would have sat down and played it. And once you've got the bug for that, I reckon it's really hard to go back to using emulation full time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. Christmas Day, Castlevania, Final Fantasy 1, Metroid, all of those classics. I want to play through all of them.
So where do you end up buying from?
eBay.
Okay, so it's being shipped from Japan or from a local?
No, so it's interesting. So the Famicom AV, I bought it from a seller in Hampshire.
Okay.
Who had one. But the EverDrive couldn't get it anywhere. So Retro Towers sold out, The US Criz website was sold out. There's one other UK stockist, I can't remember the name of the website now, but that was sold out. And then went on to eBay, and there was a seller in Ireland selling a few of them. But I've paid a little bit over the odds. So I think I've paid £125, which on the Criz website, it was on the retrotowers.co.uk website, it was 90.
Yeah.
So a little bit over the odds, but it just doesn't seem like they're available anywhere. Mm.
So
have you got one, Mads?
Yeah, I have. I bought mine from Retro Towers. I've bought all my EverDrives there, actually. But what I wanted to say is that if you buy stuff from Japan, often you get these nice bundles with lots of games, because there's so many loose carts for loose Famicom carts for sale in Japan, and they're quite cheap. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've got the game that you're going to be talking about today, for example, and a lot of others in that series, and all of the popular ones like Ice Climber and Mario and those early Donkey Kong as well, and Popeye and lots of those, and they were dirt cheap. So if you want to pick up some regular games cartridges for it, just check out the Japanese sellers on eBay. At least it's been a couple of years ago since I bought mine, but they were dirt cheap at that point.
Do you go onto the Japanese version of eBay then?
The normal UK version of eBay, and then I go for, actually right now I forget, but it was one Japanese seller that I mostly used. I'll send you a link to that later on, mate.
Yeah, good man, thank you. Yeah, so that's me, really. Plenty of stuff, as usual.
Yeah.
Well, just to jump in there on the hardware thing, I mean, obviously we all got, or a few of us got the RGB Pis recently, or not that recently, and I managed to wangle a nice CRT. I don't know if I mentioned this on an episode or just chatting to you guys, but I got
CRT. Just on the chat, I think.
Just on the chat, yeah. So obviously I still work at PlayStation, and we've got a storage room which has got all the stuff in, and it's got old stuff in that doesn't really get used anymore, like, you know, PS2s and PS1s and all sorts of crap. And it had on the shelf an old Sony Trinitron 32-inch CRT that used to just need checking for, like, if they were doing SD checks on PlayStation 3 games, and they just don't get done anymore. So I just sort of said to the boss, I said, is anyone having that telly in that cupboard? And he was like, I don't think so. I said, can I have it? And I said, look, I've got another one in my house that's not as good, but I can swap it. I said, we never use it, but maybe at some point, if you need to do a check, there'll still be one in the cupboard. But that's a decent one. I'd love to have it. So the first thing he said to me was, ask me in the morning, but yeah, I don't see why you can't have it. I was like, brilliant. I come in the next day, and he tells me that one of the other managers in the room has already asked for it and has been asking for it for months. Ah. And I said, oh, you're messing. So I went and spoke to this manager, and I said, I believe you're after that TV in the cupboard. And he went, yeah. I said, what do you want it for? He said, I just want to connect a SNES to it, because I've got an old SNES. I said, look, I have got two CRTs in my house that I don't use. I said, they're not as good as that. I said, but that one doesn't do NTSC. I said, but mine do. I said, what's your SNES? And he went, it's an American one. I said, well, there you go. I said, come round to my house. I said, I'll do you a deal. Let me have that one that's in the cupboard, and I will give you the two that I've got in my house. Because I had a little 14-inch portable, and I had a 28-inch. But I didn't really love either of them. They were just okay.
Yeah.
So he said, no problem. So he basically gave me a hand to get that TV from work to my place, and he comes to mine, has a look at the other two, and he's like, this is great. Yeah, put a deal. So I, like, give him a hand, took my old two to his car, and I ended up with this lovely black Sony Trinitron. Colours are lovely, the sound's great on it, and I've been using it with the RGB Pi.
And I bet it does do NTSC, doesn't it, Steve?
It does.
Of course it does.
Yeah, don't say nothing. I don't think he listens to this. I mean, I've just been giving Sony secrets away anyway, so I'm getting sacked. anyway, I got it. I cleaned it all up. I was like, you know, give it a proper polish, because it was covered in dust and it had bits of tape and it, like, you know, from different departments where they stuck stickers on it saying it's safe to use and all this. Peeled it all off, cleaned it all out, polished it, plugged the RGB Pi into it, booted it up, and I was like, wow, this is perfect. Now, because obviously when you're using the RGB Pi, everything's in the right resolution, everything's correct, and you don't need any filters, you don't need nothing. It's got the warm, soft glow that CRT gives you by itself. And I was like, this is brilliant. But what the problem is now is it's made me think, wouldn't I rather get, like, a real Amiga and plug it into it? Or a real Commodore 64 and plug that into it?
Especially with the computers, with the console stuff, because, let me spit my words out.
Yeah.
I use an RGB Pi for PC Engine. And I use, at the moment, I'm using an NES controller with USB.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to the
PC
Engine controller, but it's obviously it's not exactly the same. Once that the PC Engine Mini is out and they start selling the controllers separately, which they are doing, I will get myself a couple of controllers and I'll use that. But for the computer side of things, I find with emulation, you know, you really can't beat the hardware because you need the keys of the computer to correspond. You know, it doesn't always match up with a USB keyboard. You need the real hardware, really.
Well, I'm having a few issues with the RGB Pi with regards to the computers. With the consoles and the arcade stuff, it's perfect. It's brilliant. Yeah. I don't feel a need to go and get myself a SNES or a NES or a Mega Drive or a PC Engine to play on it because it looks great. It feels great with a controller. It runs perfectly. There's no loading times. There's no keyboard presses. There's no click the mouse to get past the cracked screen. There's none of that. And even though I've got a wireless USB keyboard, so I can do, you know, press the right mouse button or whatever. I still find that the emulation isn't perfect on the Amiga stuff. The Commodore 64 stuff is a bit of a pain. It just doesn't quite feel right. It splutters sometimes, and it ruins the illusion for me.
Yeah.
And there's something there, like I'm just going, I'd just rather have an Amiga on the desk and play the games through from the Amiga for real.
Yeah.
Because now, every time I've had one in the past, it's always been connected to an LCD because that's all I've had.
I was going to say, if you're going to get one, Steve, I would hurry up because the price of the Amiga is just rising and rising all the time.
Like you can just go on over to Matt's place and bag one of his.
That's true,
He's got so many.
I love a
in fact,
Matt.
He hasn't you'd got enough
to,
room.
You'd have to wade through his wardrobe, somewhere. Exactly. And I wouldn't want to delve through Matt's dirty drawers to get to his Amigas.
But yeah, maybe I'll have a word with Matt. But well, that to be funny. Funnily enough, that brings me on to something different slightly. So I told you guys the other night that I've just ordered the Retro Flag GPI case.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which
yes. So how much that did that end up costing?
£60 it is.
Okay,
so
it's not too bad actually.
No, it's pretty cheap. It was 72, including postage and Pi Zero with Wi-Fi.
Okay,
which is everything you need.
Pi Zero, okay.
It takes a Pi Zero. I've been looking at this for ages. In fact, I messaged when RetroFlag first put it up out in the States, and the only way you could get it in the UK was through Amazon, but it was just always sold out. That was it. Every time I looked for months, sold out. And I actually messaged them as the Retro Asylum to say, send me one so we can review it. And they just said, keep checking Amazon. So I was like, oh man, I'm never getting one of these. And then I kept seeing people reviewing them as well on YouTube every now and then. I was like, it looks... So what it is, for any listeners who don't know what it is it's basically a replica Game Boy case that looks absolutely perfect as a Game Boy, original Game Boy. But instead of the two buttons, it's got four buttons on it. It's got a proper colour screen built in. And it's got a cartridge port on the back with what looks like a cartridge stuck in the back. But actually, when you take the cartridge out and open it up, you put the Raspberry Pi Zero in the cartridge piece, seal it back up, and put the cartridge in as if it's a cartridge.
Yeah, it's a smart design, isn't it?
It's really smart. Yeah. And then, obviously, you put your SD card in it and it'll run RetroPie. So everything you're doing with your RetroPie on the telly, you can literally do within reason because
Does it have any shoulder buttons or anything like that? Because four buttons would be a bit too...
It's got two buttons on the back as well.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. So
you'll have to let us know how that actually works out for you.
Yeah, so if I get my
I'm interested in that as well.
Yeah, if I get my act together, well, I'll probably sell it to you, Mads, don't worry. So, yeah, if I get my act together, I'll try and do a little review of it once I've got it. But it looks fun. So, but the other thing I was going to say is maybe I'll finish it and then I'll sell it to Matt in return for an Amiga.
Good idea.
It could be a shout, but yeah.
So he likes stuff pre-configured for him, so.
He is very lazy.
Yes.
So you just want it ready, just give it to him and he switch it on and that's it. But so that's the other thing. Yeah, so I've got me Pi Zero, me RGB Pi case thing coming. No, what's it called? GPI case. But that brings me on to, where we talking about the Capcom arcade stick, Chris, also coming out recently?
Yeah, that came out. Did it come out yesterday?
I believe so.
Because there was...
But funnily enough, we wasn't invited. I don't know what's happening with a lot of these companies. You know, they're looking after all your YouTubers as usual.
Boring.
Yeah. They seem to forget that, you know, who kickstarted all this retro stuff in the first place? It's podcasts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that brings me on to another point in a minute. Go on.
Yeah, and you can get onto that in a little while. But yeah, go on, Chris.
There was just loads of stuff on Twitter, wasn't there, yesterday about people picking up. One of whom was our former esteemed host Chris O'Regan, who was putting some stuff on Twitter about the fact he got his parcel, and these things are massive, aren't they? Have you seen them? They're huge.
Yeah.
But a couple of hundred quid.
It's expensive, I think, for what you're getting. It's an arcade control stick, but it's the logo and.
So looking at it, I really don't like the fact that they painted over all of the buttons, so you can't really see them at all.
I
noticed
prefer that
they were red and blue and yellow buttons instead of being part of the logo.
Hmm. I don't like the design.
Yeah.
I really don't.
No, it's just so self-indulgent, isn't it? The whole
big
thing.
Massive
it's
word,
Capcom.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've heard some people saying that the emulation's a little bit iffy as well, which, I mean, and if it is, they ought to really take themselves outside and give themselves a really strong tour.
Well, the thing I've heard this was on a review, video review, they're not going to update the software on it unless it sells well.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I think that's pretty poor.
What about all the people who've bought it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing it probably will sell well, but I don't know. It's very pricey for the number of games you're getting, and I don't know. It's just, it's not something I'd be interested in. As soon as I saw it, I thought, oh, no.
No.
Hmm.
No, I would much rather, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, I would much rather them produce a really nice compilation for the Switch or something like that. And I know that Konami have done a couple of these recently with the Contra and the Castlevania collections. That's what I would rather have, because then you can use your arcade stick with your Switch. I'd happily pay 30, 40 quid for these things, no problem. You know, give me 15, 20 games, Capcom arcade back catalogue, happy days. But, you know, 200 quid for something which, let's face it, Capcom surely know that we can all get these things if we really want to. And you are so inclined for free and play them at home with your arcade stick. It just seems, don't know, it just doesn't, I just don't really see what the hook is.
Yeah.
Well, I think you nailed it there when you said overindulgent. That's what it smacks of to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not against them bringing out an arcade stick. By all means, bring out one that looks like it's off the front of an arcade machine, please. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Because this, it just looks ridiculous. It's a big long word with sticks sticking out of it. It doesn't look great. And then it shouldn't be £200. It's got 20 games on it, I think.
Yeah.
That's not good value for money.
And where would you put it? Like, where would you put it when you're playing? Like, my desk isn't big enough. It wouldn't go on it. So I'd have it on my lap with like half of it hanging off. Or do I need a mate to sit next to me so that we can
across
spread it along both of us?
Yeah,
I have no idea what I'd do with it.
That's what you have kids for, Chris. You just place them next to you and say, stay still, and then you can play. Daddy's going to play some games.
Yeah, you don't move. Yeah. I'm gonna one credit something. You're not moving.
Right, so in other news, did you guys notice, you probably did, that Retro Gamer came out with issue 200 this month?
Yes, congratulations.
Yeah, we mentioned this on the last one, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations. Yep. So I got it. I bought it. Saw it in the shops and I thought, look, it looks great. The cover on it's fantastic. It's got this sort of isometric, brilliant pixel art on the front, which has got nearly every computer you've ever seen. Loads of games. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
the cover's beautiful. So I read through it and I thought, this is a great issue. It's basically covering, as it's this, you know, the 200 special. It's basically covering the whole history of retro gaming from the 60s onwards. So, you know, I was reading through it and I was like, this is really good. They've actually colour-coded the pages, like I think it's blue for the 60s, then yellow and so on. So you've got all different sections through the mag going back from the past right the way up to now. And it's, you know, and I was like, this is brilliant. This is a fantastic issue. And then I read, there was a feature later on in the magazine where they covered how the revival of retro has happened and how it's become such a massive scene. And I was reading through it, and I was like, "Yeah, this is, you know, they're right. They're covering all these different things. They mentioned all the things that have made retro what it is today. So, books. They mentioned some of Sam's books. They mentioned magazines and films, and you know, influential YouTubers. And as I'm reading through it, I finished that article. I got past it, and I thought, they haven't mentioned podcasts at all. And I don't want this to come across as sour grapes, because this isn't about me thinking our show should have been mentioned in that magazine. That's not what I mean at all. But because what I mean is, podcasts from right the way back have been hugely influential in bringing retro to where it is now. And even at this point in time, there are so many fantastic retro gaming podcasts out there. And I'm talking about Tenpence Arcade, Maximum Power Up, The Retro Hour, RGDS, all of them. There are absolute wealth of fantastic podcasts out there at the moment that have all helped in one way or another to take the scene to where it is today. And I thought, what a shame that Retro Gamer has either decided not to mention it or have just not done their research properly, or, you know, because I think it's a crying shame that, you know, I feel like podcasts have really helped bring the scene to where it is. They're one of the few mediums that are really inclusive of the scene itself, because magazines aren't really inclusive apart from a letters page. YouTube videos just talk about, you know, whatever they want to talk about. Books are books. But podcasters in particular really, really get the community involved. They talk to people, they have people on the show, they interview people, you have your own fans and listeners contribute to your show. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons that retro has boomed over the last 10 to 15 years. Podcasts have got to be a part of how that's become what it's become. So I felt it was a crying shame that didn't get mentioned in Retro Gamer at all.
It is a shame, Steve, because, you know, the UK retro podcast scene is thriving now. You know, we were the first. There was, what was the other show that had, it's UK Mike, it's still going, Retro Gaming Roundup.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, that's I'm terrible with names. You know, they were going before we started, but Retro Asylum was the first UK one, but, you know, we've got Retro Hour. There's loads. Maximum Power Up. And you're right.
Arcade Attack.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's so many. And there's loads we haven't mentioned.
Get to the Chopper. You know, Vandy. We're all doing really great stuff, I think. I know I don't listen to all the shows all the time, but I did listen to Arcade Attack recently, and I really enjoyed it. So, you know, I'm hoping that it's whoever wrote that article, and I don't know who it was. I don't know if it was Darren Jones, the editor of Retro Gamer, and a personal friend of mine. You know, I'm not sure.
Are you sure?
Well, he was a friend of mine. I'm joking. You know,
cheeky.
Whoever it was, maybe they don't listen to podcasts or it's just slipped their minds. But yeah, you're right. It's a shame to be left out. I do feel that podcasts, you know, the retro gaming podcasts and probably gaming podcasts on a whole, we're kind of like the forgotten ones. You know, everything at the moment is YouTubers, and that makes me sound a bit bitter. Yeah, I'm not looking for fame or anything, but in an article like this, yeah, it'd be nice if they mention, you know, the podcasting scene.
Well, the thing is, I sort of mentioned this in the chat with some of the other hosts as well, is that they sponsor the Retro Hour. So yeah. they know damn well that podcasts are an integral part of the community. So I found it infuriating, really, that they hadn't mentioned, not only podcasts, they hadn't mentioned the Retro Hour either. You know, because shout out to them, they're a great show, and they've been sponsored by Retro Gamer, so I thought they should at least mention them.
Yeah.
As part of it, I don't know, it baffled me. It just baffled me that they
It is strange, and it's a shame, you know. It's not to say that they haven't covered a podcast, because, you know, they've done a feature on us, they've done a feature on the Retro Hour, and they've probably done features on other shows. I don't actually buy the magazine anymore. That's not me saying it's rubbish or anything. It's just, you know, unfortunately, it's a cost that I can't afford at the moment. So it's one of those things that had to go.
Well, he won't do a feature on us again after my little rant, but but I thought it needed. It needed saying. You know,
we'll get Darren on and he can explain himself.
I'm up for that.
We'll see.
Do you know what I love the magazine, and I'm at the moment trying to go back and collect all the old ones. So anyone's got any old stack of retro games that they want to sell, I'll buy them, seriously. So I'm paying at the moment.
But they're not the proper old ones.
I'll sell them to Chris.
Yeah.
They're not the
original, because it changed publishers. You know, the original lot were done by Martin Carroll, and it had a very different feel
to it. That's
right,
yeah. I love the first 20 issues.
I like both styles.
I think it was very UK-based, wasn't it?
And, you know, I think for a while it did get a bit stale. It's felt like the same thing month in, month out. Yeah. But from what I've been told, that recent, you know, the past year or so, it's really done well, and, you know, they've been churning out new articles and what have you. So
it's great. Yeah, I'm a big fan. But, you know, going back to this whole kind of, you know, YouTubers get a lot of almost like celebrity, not celebrity, that's the wrong word, but there's a lot of popularity with YouTubers at the moment. To my mind, you don't have this community without all aspects of it. The magazine's a big part of that, because a lot of our community have fond memories and a lot of nostalgia for the magazine. So the print magazine does well with those people. We're a part of it. The UK retro gaming podcast community is a part of it. The wider world retro gaming podcast community, the YouTubers. And you know what? I think if you didn't have one aspect of that community, the whole community would suffer. So to my mind, we should all be part of that one big collaborative getting behind the scene. But I do agree with what both of you were saying. Sometimes it feels like podcasts are the kind of poor cousin in all of that. You know,
Retro events at the moment, you know, a lot of the YouTubers are being invited to do panels, and no offence to them, but, you know, you're just running at a YouTube channel. I'm not really that interested in what you've got to say, and that sounds terrible, but I want to hear from the programmers, the people who worked at the software companies, you know, maybe the people who are working on the magazines at the time, you know, Paul, you know, the stuff, industry people, and, you know, the work that Paul Monaghan's put into all of that, chasing all the magazine stuff, you know, he's... I mean, the guy has been to Bath this week, and he's been stalking the entire run of future publishing staff. So
and Sam Dyer.
You know, that sounds bad. I am interested in some of the YouTubers' stories. You know, there's great people out there, but a lot of them, you know, they're just playing games and commenting on them. I guess that's kind of what we do, but, you know. Yeah. It does. It makes me sound bitter. I'm not bitter. You know, Kim Justice, the work she does on the documentaries and all
she's
that.
Brilliant.
Amazing.
Retro Man Cave.
Neil. Again, superb. Brilliant. Mark from Mark Fixes stuff. The guy, you know, he's helped me out a few times. You know, there's good people out there on the YouTube scene. I'm not saying there isn't, you know.
No, some of the stuff
that they do get a lot of the limelight, and the podcasts are just shoved to one side. It seems to me that we're okay for hosting shows, but no one's interested in what we've really got to say.
No, but I agree with what you're saying, because if you want to watch a panel, I would rather watch, like you just said there, a panel of people who were previously in the industry, because what I want really is insight rather than just someone's opinion about something. Because when you're watching sort of YouTubers, and I'm not talking about the ones that we've just mentioned, because some of them are fantastic and just brilliant in their own rights. But a lot of YouTubers are just giving you their opinion of what they, in the same way that we do, is just talking about stuff. So if you go to see a panel, I want to speak to someone who worked at Ocean or at Imagine or Psygnosis or something. And I'm like, wow, that's real. Behind the scenes of what was going on.
This is going to sound even worse. I'm digging a hole for myself here, but a lot of the YouTubers are a little bit younger than us. We experience the games firsthand. A lot of these guys, they're discovering them now and playing them for the first time and giving you their thoughts on, which is fine. But I'd rather hear from people who were there at the time they were playing the games or making the games. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Anyway, right, Jen, so we move on to the main part of the show.
Yes.
So I've actually got a final piece of news.
Ah, final piece of news. Go for it, Max.
Final piece of news. So actually, I was just earlier today browsing one of my favorite websites when it comes to retro news, so Indie Retro News. Yep. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Dean. You and we both love the old Hero game, right?
For the Amiga. Yeah. Rero.
Yes, Rero for the Amiga has been announced. And it looks beautiful, mate.
It does. There's a demo out. I've not downloaded it yet. I really want to have... I'm going to download this first thing in the morning and have a go.
Yeah, so the last time we heard about Hero being ported to the Amiga, I'm pretty sure we saw it with the just ripped sprites from some older version, yeah. And it didn't look too good. But now they've clearly had somebody do some graphics work on it, so it looks really beautiful. And the name changed to Riro. Do you know why it's called Riro?
No, I don't.
Dyslexic.
So it's no longer he no longer has a helicopter pack. He's rocket driven. So it's a rocket driven emergency rescue operation.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's
beautiful.
Cool. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Nice.
And it looks really good. And I love that game. That's one of my favorite old 8-bit games.
Yeah, still plays so well. C64.
Yes. So I'm definitely going to check this out. Mm,
yeah, it should be good.
Mm. Yeah.
Cool.
Nice one.
Any more news?
Nope. No more from me.
Be good.
I'm newsless.
Excellent. Dean?
No, I'm all done.
Retro Asylum.
So, okay, so getting on to the main part of the episode, I guess I should explain to the listeners exactly what this the end thing actually means. So the plan is, what we've decided we're going to do is we're all going to pick a game each. Pretty much, we'll all have our reasons for why we picked the game, but for myself, I'm picking something that I used to love playing back in the day, that I never completed, that at this point in time, I think is a pretty damn good game. And I'm going to go and spend, or we're all going to go and spend, a couple of weeks trying to finish whichever game we've chosen. And then we're going to come back for part two, the end part two, in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk about the same game, how we got on, did we finish it, what do we think of it now, do we still like it, do we now hate it, do we still think it's a great game. And, you know, and we're going to share our thoughts on actually going back and completing one of those games that we loved back in the day and now have completed. So we're all going to choose a game each, or we've all chosen a game each. And I think what we were discussing before, guys, was that it'd be great if the listeners want to join in, see what games we've picked, if they want to pick one of them as well, or, you know, one we've chosen, and play them as well, and see if they can complete them, and if they can, or even if they can't, send us what your thoughts, you know, messages on Facebook, or send an MP3 or whatever, of how you've got on with the same game, and, you know, we'll include it in the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sounds that like is the plan. So who wants to kick us off with their choice of game and why they've chosen it?
I think you should kick us off, Steve, given it's your concept.
All right, I'll kick us off. So, okay, so I... fine. I have chosen...
Just throw you in.
Yeah, that's fine. That's made me do everything else on this show. And I realise that now I'm hosting it, I'm probably editing it as well.
Now exactly, you're volunteering. Exactly. You might as well.
Yeah, no worries. It's fine. yeah, so I have decided to go back and try and complete Batman the movie on the Amiga.
Cool.
Yeah. So nice. I'll just give my reasons. So I played this back in the day, and I think this is one of Ocean's better games. I'm a fan of Ocean. I remember Ocean with a lot of, you know, fond memories. But Batman is one of the games that really stood out because I've never really got that far into it. I've got through the platforming level and I've got through the car level. That's as far as I've gone with it. But I always remember it thinking, this is brilliant. And I've seen pictures of it on later levels, flying the Batwing down streets and stuff. And I've always thought, God, it looks like a fantastic game, but I've never got any further than the car level.
Who are you?
I'm Batman. So, yeah, I, you know, it's a game that I've played recently and I still enjoy, even though I usually just have a 5-minute bash on the platform levels. It's still a great-looking game, it's a great-sounding game, and I would like to see, does it hold true if you get through all the levels? And I want to know what happens at the end as well. So, that's my choice, Batman the movie on the Amiga.
How far can you get, Steve?
It's the crack screen. No, I can get past the platformer level onto the car level.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so
it was a great 3D section, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things with Ocean, wasn't it? Is the variety of the levels. They were always like, this one's a platform level, this is a puzzle level, this is a shooting level, this is the racing level. They always used to mix it up. So that's like...
They did, but only a few of their games really done it for me. You know, they'd done all these movie licenses, yeah, and they all kind of used the same formula, but it was, for me, it was a Spectrum version of RoboCop, Batman the movie.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Yeah. I weren't too keen on a lot of the others. I know that the Untouchables was pretty good, but that was tough.
Navy SEALs?
Yeah, they did Navy SEALs. And
I used to enjoy that. I found that really hard.
Terminator 2 is shockingly bad.
Oh, that was rubbish.
It's terrible.
I mean, it's bad on the Amiga. You want to try the Spectrum version. Oh, my good God.
Ooh. Mm.
I actually used to love that on the Amiga.
Yeah?
I'm not sure why.
Really?
I played that a lot. Yeah. Oh.
Really bad. Really bad. But yeah, Batman's one of the better ones. But Batman really kind of used the material from the film and the different types of levels really quite well. Yeah. So I want to explore that. I want to get beyond.
I love the music in that game as well.
So cool, man. Yeah, so brilliant. 80s, but really good.
Mm.
Yeah. So, like I say, I want to push beyond that car level. I want to see, is it more platformers after that? Is there a shooting level? I know there's a Batwing level. I've seen pictures of it, but I've never got to it. So I want to do it.
I think
so
there's five stages.
Well, that's all right. That's good. Yeah. So I will report back in 2 weeks with my findings, and hopefully I'll have completed it and we'll be able to tell you the ending without looking at YouTube. And we'll see how we get on. And like I say, if the listeners want to join in, I'm playing Batman, the movie on the Amiga. Join in, see how you get on, and whatever games the other guys have got, join in, send us your thoughts, and we'll include them. So who's next and what have you picked?
Do you want me to go next?
Yeah, you go, Dean.
I've started off this when we first started recording, or just before we started recording, we was talking about this, and Steve's kind of ruined it for me because he has completed the game. It's Scramble, which is the 1981 shooter by Koinami. Yep. Great game. I've been playing it ever since it came out, and I can get onto the last level. It's only got 5 stages, but I could never get off the last level. It gets really tough. You got they're like corridors that you got to try and squeeze through, and the game's scrolling quite fast, and if you don't like pull back diagonally on the joystick and lower yourself, you just smash into the backgrounds, and I find it really hard. Apparently Steve doesn't, and he has finished the game.
I've looped it more than once.
Oh, you've looped it more than once.
I have looped it.
Oh. You're really showing off, aren't you?
I'm sorry, mate. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Should I choose a different game, Steve?
No.
This is obviously far too easy.
Well, you know. you see how many times you can loop it? Maybe it's got an ending.
Maybe. About it. But
get to the kill screen.
I'll tell
Dean.
You what, if I complete this, or if I loop it, as Steve says, I will try the sequel, which was what was the sequel called?
Super Scramble Cobra. 2.
No, Super Cobra, use a helicopter.
Cool. Okay. Which,
that's a lot harder. Complete that, Steve.
I've completed that.
Yeah, no, loop that one. Really.
go for it. I mean, see if you can loop it, then jump onto the other one. And if you can't, then you obviously are really bad at games.
Yeah, I've completed it on the Vectrex. It's a really nice version on the Vectrex, but I've never completed the arcade game. And what I like about old arcade games is there's no option to continue. You don't get credits and continue option when you lose all 3 of your lives.
Mm.
Start again.
Yeah.
Mm. Nice.
So that sounds like the way we're playing arcade games in the Game Club.
That's what you've got to do. Mm. I don't like games with continue.
Nah, me neither, actually.
Okay. Nice. Who's next?
I'll go.
Matt?
Yeah. So I've chosen one of the games that most of our listeners probably know that I really, really love. So Simon Phipps made a brilliant game back in 1989,
Tetris.
I think it was. Actually, it was made in 88, but no, it wasn't Tetris. It was Rig Dangerous from Core Design. So it's such a beautiful and such a hard game. I remember Steve, you and I and Paul Davis played what was it called? Brutal Games episode.
Masochist.
Yeah, we had what was the 3-point thing for that? That was getting through the first stage without losing a single life, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
That was so tough, and it only made me love the game even more. I've loved playing this game forever, for as long as I can remember. And I'm really excited to see. I mean, I know there's 5 levels in this one,
yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I've only ever been to the 3rd level, and the past 15 years I've only ever been to the 2nd level, because that pyramid level there kills me every single time. There's so many things you need to memorize, and I really want to see the rest of this game.
Sorry Matt to interrupt, but was there a version, or it might have been the sequel, where you could select what level you start on?
I'm pretty sure you couldn't on my version, at least.
I'm maybe sure it got re-released because people were moaning that they couldn't complete. Yeah. I might be wrong. Yeah, but, I might be wrong, but...
That could be.
Could have been part of the crack.
No, this wasn't.
Sometimes
a crack,
you could do that as part of the crack.
I was a good boy.
So the releases I know of are there's the first game, and then there's the second game, and then they released the one called Rick Dangerous 2.5.
That might be the version where you could select the level then.
Could be. Could be.
But yeah, but this classic game.
Such a brilliant game that I've spent so much time with, and I'm really excited to see whether I will actually hate it when we get to the end of this, because I can't get all the way through it, and then there's too much to memorize for my old brain. But let's see.
Yeah, I think that was a complaint from a lot of people, was it's one of those games you can't complete on your first go. You have to die and then memorize where the traps and baddies come out.
It's just as much a puzzle game as it is, or a memorization game, as it is a platformer. Yeah. And that's, I actually like that.
Yeah, that was the way it was designed. Yeah, exactly. It was by design, wasn't it?
I love
it?
The sound effect of the, you know, when the bad, or when you die.
Do you know that was actually Simon himself recording himself saying stupid sounds, and then they chose that one.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So, just to clarify there, Mads, then, so you're doing Rick Dangerous 1 on the Amiga?
Yeah, and I will most definitely, just I'm putting this out here immediately, I will be using save states. I'm gonna save as soon as I get to level 2 with all my lives, and then I'm gonna practice level 2 until I get to level 3, and then I'm gonna do a save state there, and then in the end I'll see if I can actually do it all in one go.
Cool.
That's the way to do it.
There's no rules on this. This is the one. This isn't the game club. We're not trying to get the top scores or anything. We want to get to the end. So whichever way.
So you mean I can't win, Steve? So if I get to the end and Chris doesn't, that will give me a point, right?
If you can,
you stop
you
it
can
now.
Claim it as a victory
this
if you
does
want,
not
Mads.
Count.
You can claim it as a victory if you want.
Yes, cool.
No, we can't. So you stop encouraging
it. You can't add it onto your game club points, but you know.
Damn it.
But anyway, so like I say, this is about getting to the end. So whichever way you see fit to get yourself to the end, do that. Because you want to see the end, and we want to be able to tell listeners what, you know, what it was like, and what we now think about the game having completed it. So, by whatever means, really. I mean, don't put the cheat on and just scroll through the whole thing, because that's a bit of a waste of time. Try and play your way through it. But yeah, I would say no cheats, but save states are allowed. Cool. Yeah, if that, you know. So yeah, it's got to be. You still got to play it properly. Cool. So Chris, what about you?
Right. So I've chosen a game that I'd never played up until you first floated out this idea for this episode, and I have been getting a little bit of practice in, but it's a series which has spawned over 50 games, I believe 35 million copies in total sold, and it's our favourite cleaning droid in his battle against the Dr. Willy in the Willy Wars. It's Mega Man.
So you're going to complete all 50
Mega
games
Man.
By next week?
I'm going to in one session, and I'm going to stream it.
Excellent.
No, not at all. So I am going to go back to the start, because I have never, until about 3 weeks ago, I had never played a Mega Man game. But what gave me the idea for this is I like my podcasts, and I like my music podcasts, and there is a music podcast that's been going for years called the Super Marcato Brothers. So I want to give them a big shout out. Google Super Marcato Brothers if you're interested in video game music. Two American brothers who are also composers themselves. And they do a load of different themes. But one of the things they did back in the early days is they take a game series and they pull out some of the best tracks from that series. And with it being US-based, it was very NES-focused and still is very NES-focused. So one of their very first episodes, they looked at the Mega Man series. And I often have these podcasts on if I'm working at home, just in the background while I'm working. And actually, a few occasions during that episode, actually just stopped and listened and thought, wow, this is amazing chiptune music. This is like, now I can see where the inspiration for the music from Shovel Knight came. Because this is exactly like that, only it's a bit more authentic chiptune. So that got me thinking, I really must go and try those Mega Man games. But then I hear that they're really hard. And I know that you guys, was it Mega Man 2 that was played as part of a Brutal Games episode on RA?
Yeah, pretty sure it was. Yeah.
And I know you've always said, Mads, that it's really hard. And to be honest, I'm not brilliant at games, I don't think. But just recently, and we talked about this a little bit on the Shoot 'em Up episode, Steve. What did Dodonpachi? We talked about this on the Dodonpachi episode, that actually it's actually quite fun getting good at these things.
You know, Chris, it's Dodonpachi.
Oh, you corrected me. Yeah, well done.
Carry on.
Dodonpachi. So, yeah. And actually, over the course of the month, you practice, and we're finding this on Metal Slug, the more you practice, the better you get. And actually, you can get good at these things. So, when you floated this idea for this episode, I thought, well, this is now the perfect time for me to really get stuck in, get some practice in, and do it. So I'm going to try and finish Mega Man 1. And the way I'm going to play this, so I've bought the Mega Man Legacy Collection, £11 on Switch for all six, for the first six games. Incredible value. So bought that on the Switch. I'm going to play that on the Switch. And the way Mega Man 1 worked is that there was no passwords, there was no save feature. You had to go through the whole game from start to finish on the NES or the Famicom, wherever you played it. Now, that would have been brutal at first. How you ever would have got enough practice on some of the later levels, once you get past the initial stage where you can choose from the six characters.
You leave your system on and hope that it doesn't burn the house down.
Exactly.
How you used to do it back in the day.
You'd have been no other way to do it. So the way I'm going to do it on the Switch, a little bit like Mads, I'm going to go through it. With the Switch, obviously, you can just set it into sleep mode, or you can save your current position. You can't really save states, but you can save your current position. So I'm going to practice this game, and I'm going to practice it until I think I'm ready, because the last stage is basically a complete boss rush of all of the bosses, one after the other. I'm not going to try and one credit this, because I think that would be pretty much nigh on impossible. The game allows you just to continue endlessly, and you can just carry on. But what I am...
I'm sure you could do
it. What I am going to do is I'm going to get to the point where I do it in one go, and I'm going to try and record it and post it on our YouTube channel. So I want to practice it, and then I want to do it all from start to finish in one session. That's my aim.
Mm, so a lofty goal, but remember that there is a way through that game. There is an order in which you need to defeat the bosses, because you need the prior boss's weapon to defeat the next one. Yeah, and if you do it in the right way, it's actually a lot easier. I mean, the boss fights can be trivial if you have the right weapon.
And it's pretty much common sense, isn't it? You need the ice man, the ice weapon beats the fire weapon, and et cetera, et cetera. But I think the earlier ones, I know that there's some stages that are a little more difficult on the platform inside. I have started to scope this out, and I have got...
There are some really, really devious platforms.
Crikey, there's one where the platforms fall away. Oh my God, that nearly ended my Switch against the wall. That did win it. So there's going to be much frustration, but I think with the practice I've already had, I think I can do this, and I might even stream it. I'd like to try and stream it if I can, but obviously, who knows when they've run that I will actually do it. But yeah, I haven't got much time, but so I'm going to try.
Cool. I think whoever does complete their game, and I bet you I still don't complete Scramble, despite it being the easiest game here to complete, I think you all have to try and complete Airwolf on the ZX Spectrum.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
That's impossible.
That's your prize for winning.
That's not a prize, Dean.
That's one of the hardest games ever made, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awful.
Cool.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not great.
So to round up then, I have got Batman the Movie on the Amiga. Dean has got Scramble on the arcade. Mads has got
Rick Dangerous
on the Amiga.
Yeah.
And Chris has got
Mega Man on the NES.
Cool. So, like I say, listeners, join in. We're going to end the episode in a minute or two. This is part one. We'll return in part two with the second part of this episode, which will be in 2 weeks' time from now, and we will talk about how we got on, whether we finished it, and obviously if you guys send us anything in, we'll include that in the show, include your clips if you send them in, and include your comments, so join in. So guys, let's say, should we round it up and set off to embark on this amazing project?
Let's do it.
So we got any
shout-outs, Steve? Cheers. Yes, I have. I've got one. Gareth Hollands, he wrote in and said how much he's enjoying the show, how much he enjoys Chris and Mads on the... Their
good man.
Section. We like him. Yeah. We like him, don't we? He's a good guy.
These two have got so many fans now, I'm feeling like... Yeah, it's Matt in his voice. Yeah, that's what it is.
Sexy Matt.
The sexy one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, just want to say thanks for the feedback to Gareth. And, you know, if any of you guys, because we do get feedback via Twitter and Facebook, but, you know, if you want to email in, dean@retroasylum.com, and I'll pass on the messages to the rest of the team.
Yeah, I'd just like to echo that as well, to say if any listeners have any ideas for episodes that you'd like to see us do, or even themes that you'd like to see us tackle in the game club, don't be shy. Send them over. We might ignore them. We might not. You know, but do send them in. And it's always nice to hear what you would like to hear us talking about and seeing us do. So yeah, do it.
Yeah, and also there's the Discord channel. If you want to jump on that, there is a link on our website, which is retroasylum.com. There's a tab on there, it says Discord. Press that and that will take you to our Discord channel.
Yeah, and actually having Matt on the last Gaming Club episode has brought like 30 new members to Discord recently.
It's so incredible.
A lot of new people to talk with there.
50 left. Well, we've got 30 new ones.
Don't tell him that.
Yeah, I agree with what Dean's saying there, though, about the fans are all loving Chris and Mads now. So it's a good job when me and Dean come on that we don't offend everyone with our comments.
Well, I'll probably upset the entire retro scene in this one episode.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Retro gamer production staff, the retro YouTube scene. Yeah.
There's a reason we're not on very often. anyway, yeah, so I'd like to give a quick shout out to Matt, who couldn't be here tonight because he doesn't think he's good enough to complete any games, or he's just too lazy.
Poor Matt.
Shout out to all the other podcasts I mentioned before. And a quick shout out to Arcade Attack, who I've been chatting to on Facebook. They seem like nice guys. Check out their show. I know you guys have had a quick listen to them as well. Really good. Mm. And they seem like nice lads. Might get them on at some point. And that's it from me until next time. So, yeah. Take it easy, guys, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks when we complete these games.
See you
soon. Bye-bye, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.